everybody back. That's good. Everybody came back. That's good. Oh, that's so good. My name's Chris Raymer, grateful recovered alcoholic drug addict. We'd encourage everybody, again, thanks for the tapers, because I sometimes forget to do that. Yeah, we get fortunate enough to get to come to a bunch of these and get it, and a lot of people can't, and so these, you support, you buy the CDs and stuff, it helps. It's just another way of contributing, so thank you so much. Real quick, because I get asked a lot about this stuff, this seventh tradition stuff, this is the way I like to do it. I mean, the way they do it, and I've been some where they charge a little stipend to kind of cover their butts, but the seventh tradition stuff is like for self-supporting. It used to be, back when I first started talking years and years, you know, $200 would get you anywhere in the country, and I guarantee you, flying is expensive now, and a little Motel 6 was expensive, and the speakers on any of these, this AA, CA, or any of our talks, that we don't get any money for this. I think we should, but we just know. Absolutely not. This is okay. Seventh tradition stuff. Just thanks for dropping a dollar in the deal and covering the basket. All the guys that organize this, they're always reaching in their pocket, buying another hamburger for the speaker and this, that, and the other. Stuff all adds up. So thanks for doing it. It's all I'm getting at. I was traveling with a guy. I was in Houston doing a talk, and this guy that I've worked with, he's like 20 years sober too. And he says, oh, you know, I said something about having an apartment in San Antonio, and he says, so you've got two houses? And I said, yeah. If you buy real small houses, you could buy a dozen of them, as small as we buy them, you know. And he says, oh, well, you must get a bunch because you speak so much. You know, you get all that extra money from that. And I guess and I'm looking at this guy, and he's in AA, and he thinks that we're getting money for this. It freaks me out that people don't understand that. No. Okay. We want to talk about qualifying a drunk now and an addict, and kind of slide through this stuff, visit a little bit about this powerlessness piece, the disease itself. We'll go to lunch and then we'll come back, and then I want to talk to you in the next hour about the next 11 steps, the next 10 steps, because I want to take the fourth and the last hour after lunch. We've got two little sessions after lunch, because we don't want to kill anybody here weighing them down. I hate those things, you know, workshops where you're just like, you know, God, are they ever going to finish, you know, and it's like, because I think that's one of the big problems that we've made in our fellowships, is that we've made this too damn complicated. This is not that complicated. I know a lot of you guys, you go to workshops and, you know, we spent all weekend talking about 6 and 7, you know. We're not. Okay, so. Because I think if it had been that important, Bill Wilson would have given it a little more attention than two paragraphs. I don't care what he wrote subsequently after that. I know some of y'all make a big deal of that. My deal again is my point of coming from is triage. I got a little newcomer coming in here. I want to get him through the steps. I want to get him connected spiritually as quick as possible. Are we all on that same page? Okay, I can't take every person that I sponsor through the steps at the same pace. Because some of you little guys are fried pies when you get here. Some of you guys, if I was dealing with just a little alcoholic, I could let you sleep for 3 days and get you detoxed, and I could get you in there. We could be okay. Little cocaine addicts are pretty easy to do because they have practically no detox. I don't know if y'all know that or not. That's one of the reasons that cocaine addicts die so often, is because they bounce too quick, you know. In the United States, you bring a cocaine addict in and says, we want to admit this guy. By the time the paperwork to admit him is dry, he's had a nap. And and eaten a little snack. And he says, you know, I don't know what the big deal was. I mean, I think we're overreacting here a little bit. Y'all follow? But then on the other end of the spectrum, again, we've got the people that are drinking or possibly eating those stupid prescription medications, and they just suffer for months. And they have a tough time zipping their pants for about the first 2 months they're in here. And so, or unzipping, whichever. And so you can't go as fast with those guys. You gotta be gentle with them. Everybody hears these CDs and, well, if anybody had taken me through the steps that fast, I would have died. You know, I understand that. But how many people do we kill with the belief that everybody has to go slow? It's my one point of contention with Narcotics Anonymous. They are adamant about take your time to work the steps. And I am equally adamant of If you have time to work the steps, you ain't one of us. The big therapist stuff in treatment is, again, it goes back to, we didn't get sick overnight, we're not going to get well overnight. Y'all understand this. Some people misunderstand when I tell my story from the podium. I had a spiritual experience. I'm between my fourth and fifth step when I had a spiritual experience, when the obsession lifted from me. You with me? I'm 2 weeks into this, diligently working. The guy that's got my sponsor, he's showing me how to do 10 and 11. I'm praying and meditating, and he's having me work. I'm working with others while I'm there at the club. You follow? I'm not doing big book seminars and sponsoring people. I'm getting coffee for you. That's leaps and bounds from where I was as a selfish individual. You with me? If I can do anything for you, in the olden days, it was absolutely by accident if that happened. But I want you to understand that the stuff on the outside took a long time. I was years trying to heal financially. Physically, there was lots of damage, physical damage that took a long, long time to heal. You know, it wasn't an overnight matter. But the spiritual experience that allowed the obsession to be removed happened very quickly, and can happen very quickly if you'll do the work at a pretty good clip. I was talking to one of the nice ladies earlier. Joe and Charlie were famous about trying to get people off dead center with this. So somewhere along the line, guys, we got this idea that it was okay to go slow. Well, go whatever pace you want. Why are we doing that? Why are we telling people that? I mean, you might not be able to sense it. Here's what happens. Here's a guy named Bill White. He wrote a book called Slaying the Dragon. But he wrote some excellent articles about this little window of opportunity. And I talk about it pretty often. There's a time when we can come into this thing and get our feet on the ground and start feeling better physically and get detoxed. And there's a window where it seems like we don't have to do jack. It seems like everything we touch is spiritual in nature and we're comfortable in our skin. You with us? We make fun of them when they come into meetings. The old geezers want to sit up and laugh at us. He's on a pink cloud now. Well, I understand it, but I personally find the term derogatory. I mean, it's not a pink cloud. It's God's grace. And William, yeah. This guy that wrote these articles understood that this is an anomaly. Now, and I don't know how long it's going to last. And he makes a clear point in here. That window of opportunity to get your feet on the ground and feel comfortable in your skin may last 6 months, and it may last 6 weeks, and it may last 6 hours. It's different for different people. I know that most of us have experienced it. I've done workshops where we raised our hands, and most everybody in the room had a period of where they just walked in. It's like dodging a bullet. Oh my God, I'm saved. But it's not going to stay that way. What the old timer said after he made a joke about the pink cloud is true. When you come out of that window of opportunity, you're going to be in more pain than you've ever been in your life. And if you're not on solid ground when that pain hits, you're going to drink and you're going to grow. So that's just the nature of the beast. I sense a real feeling of urgency around doing this work with my guys. Because if I drag my feet as a sponsor getting you through the work, and you come out the other side into reality, you relapse. And then you come back in the meetings and somebody just wants to take your inventory and say, well, you just didn't want it. It's my one big bone with people that say they're sponsors and yet don't sponsor. The problem, we're going to talk about it in that last hour. The problem with this business is, and I take it pretty seriously, my job is to get you connected spiritually. And I'm going to do whatever I can do to get that done. But I'm not going to belabor this and take forever to do it. Because if you're not willing to do what I want you to do to make this happen pretty quick, then I need to move on to somebody that will. You follow? I'm not here for your convenience. I don't want a damn thing that you have. You want something that I got called sobriety? Then let me show you what I did. And I did it quickly. So, there you go. First thing we got to do is give these guys a case of alcoholism. Everybody comes in and says, I'm an alcoholic. I can go to that hospital. There's 80 patients in that hospital this morning. And I can go to every single one of them, especially the ones coming just out of detox. Hey, are you an alcoholic and an addict? And every single one of them will say yes. You with us? They hurt. The pain. Yes. The tears. I'll do anything to get well. And they mean it. And if we can get them pretty fast, they can get their feet on the ground. But if we mess with them too long, let them sit too long, what happens is this thing called ego, Harry Thiebaut wrote about it in the 30s, the resurgence of the ego starts to come back. How many of y'all understand, without going into a lot of detail, what happens is a patient comes in and they say, I'm going to do anything you ask me to do. And they show up on time and they do, you with me? They got a damn pole, you know, with a drip, and they're hauling from SCU and they're up to the you know, they're, boy, this guy's willing to go to anything. Walk out of SCU with your butt showing, go sit in Big Book. You're ready to get sober, aren't you, buddy? Uh-huh. 3 days later, he's found she was walking out of SCU. I saw her in those little paper slippers, and I knew that God brought her to me. Holy shit. Yeah, okay. That might explain why you weren't in Big Book this morning, right? Yeah. We were up kind of late last night. I think, you know, talking God and stuff. You know, what's happening is their ego's rebuilding itself. Now, all of a sudden, sobriety and God was the most important thing in my entire life. And now, all of a sudden, it's taken second place to the girl. You know, you get a call from work, and now all of a sudden work. And so ego's rebuilding, and now all of a sudden everything else is more important than what we started out to be. You follow? If I don't give these cats a case of alcoholism, if I don't help them see that they're dying of a fatal progressive illness, they're going to crap out. Because they're not going to remember the consequences of a week or a month ago. The page that we read the first hour talked about the mental obsession. It says you won't remember the consequences of even a week or a month ago. Can y'all remember back to that? If I could remember the sound of that jail cell clanging in Denton, Texas, when I got my first DWI, and I turned around and there was a guy about the size of six of you, y'all, I would never drink again. I mean, I did. I swore off. I'm hyperventilating, breathing through the bars. I'm hyperventilating because I've heard that click of that jail, and I know that this is going to be one long damn night with me in the drunk tank. Nothing happened, guys. I'm just locked up for the first time, and I'm humiliated, and I'm not ever going to do it. And I know why, because I'm drinking. I'm not going to drink. And I didn't. Until the next night. And my head said, Chris, buddy, you need something to knock the edge off. But don't do like you did last night. Just one. And then the craving kicks in, and I'm off to the stupid races again. The doctor's opinion up in the front of the book, Dr. Silkworth wrote the letters. He began to see an anomaly. He began to see that people that came to his hospital to detox, didn't matter if it was a drop-dead gorgeous woman or a butt-ugly guy, it didn't matter. They were certain similarities. And this was the basis of which the American Medical Association, many years later, used as a basis for saying that alcoholism and drug addiction was a disease, not some kind of a behavioral problem. In order to be an alcoholic or a drug addict, you guys have got to have two main symptoms. You have to have the phenomena called craving. In the doctor's opinion, up to page 23, don't want to write it down, y'all can look at it later, but this is how it's busted out in the book. Up to page 23, it talks about alcohol in your body. What happens when I drink? This phenomenon of craving kicks in. The problem is not that Chris Raymer drank a beer. Millions of people in over Canada are drinking a beer today. The problem is that I drank 18 beers. My first wife used to say, you just seem so thirsty sometimes. I'll tell you, that Texas machismo crap has killed millions of Texans, I guarantee you. You know, yeah, well, you know, we... Oh, my gosh. But what happens is, with people that are genetically wired like us, it's a point that I need to mention, alcoholism and drug addiction, folks, because of the latest studies that have come through, we know without a shadow of a doubt it's genetic. If you want to continue to blame getting slapped around as a kid for your alcoholism, go ahead, but there's going to be more and more people who are going to turn around and call you a fruitcake because of it. I'm not saying that outside stuff didn't affect you. It did not cause alcoholism. It's genetic, folks. It's no different than... I have high cholesterol. I eat like a little bird, and I watch what I put in my body. But cholesterol killed my father, and it will kill me, and it will kill my twin brother, because we both have very unusually high cholesterol. We both... Y'all with us? It's just genetic. It's not anything I'm doing. It's just genetics. There's nothing I can do. It's the same thing with alcoholism. My little sister didn't catch the bullet. My twin brother did. Raised in the same family. She's never had a problem with alcohol. We saw her at Christmas again. It's just same story, second verse. You know, just they drink a little glass of wine and set it down. And, Mom, Jesus, drink up. It's free. She looks around like this. She's a little geek right now. She looks around and she says, no, it's just, it tastes a little off. Is there alcohol in it? I don't care if it's a dead cricket floating in it. I'm going to drink it. We're just wired different, guys. I'm just telling you. But once I start to drink, the question that we ask the newcomers, the doctor's opinion talks about, once you start to drink, can you guarantee me how much you're going to drink? People get confused because they think that every time I drink until I black out. End-stage alcoholism looks like that. You'll follow? But that's what I'm saying. There's many of us that it progresses very slowly. And we've got people in our hospital right now, 50, 60 years old, that just recently began to develop symptoms of alcoholism, obvious symptoms of no control once they started. They were born with it, but it progressed very slowly in them, genetically. We can look at different races. The Asian community has very little propensity for alcoholism and drug addiction in their race. It's because it's genetic. They certainly live under a pressure cooker existence, but it doesn't seem to affect them like it does us. If any of you guys have North American Indian blood in you, Eskimo blood, any of that in you, in your... Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. The chances are you caught that genetic marker. It's an amazing thing to do. There's a great book out there called Born That Way that talks about the age-old question of nature versus nurture. It's an excellent read. It doesn't just talk about alcoholism, but it talks about this idea that mom and dad passed on a lot of stuff, and it wasn't so much how we were held as how... as, well, yeah, okay. So I started to, but I didn't. Okay. So the first thing, most everybody can understand that. Yeah, God, I started a drink or I started a drug and it got away from me. That's the question. We ought to ask every drug addict, instead of asking, how many DWIs have you had? How many times have you been to prison? How many times? This is all crappy, stupid questions. This is how we kill women in AA, because that's what we want to do, is we want to ask them about the drama. But like, again, a lot of these women have been insulated. They're not going to experience a lot of that stuff. We need to ask one question around the drugs with the women and the men. How many times did you ever go back to a money machine in one night? Yeah, if it's more than once, welcome to Narcotics Anonymous. You know, but isn't that the truth? We don't do that. That's not normal. That's how my first wife knew I had a problem with drugs to begin with. She said, you were back at this money machine 4 times last night. Well, there's my money. No, it's our money. And now it's no money. What was that about? Why didn't you just take the whole checking account at 5 o'clock? You with me? Because I wanted $60 at 5 o'clock, because I was just going to get a little something to knock the edge off, and then I was going to go on down the road. And I knocked the edge off, and the phenomenon of craving kicked in, and I went back and got another $60. And another $60, and another $60, and another $60. But that's all. Okay, so everybody can pretty well see this. Our treatment center industry is built around that phenomenon called craving business. You know, we get past it by a thing called detox. Simple to do. We're going to take the same chemical you're addicted to. We're going to use that to wean you off of that substance, get it out of your system. At that particular point, there is no more craving involved. I don't care what Terence Gorski says. There's no more craving involved. We have 24 anti-craving medications out there on the surface coming at us, you know, to help us with the cravings. They work great, folks. Take them if you can. They work great. But once the stuff's out of your system, the craving problem is not in there. This is where nobody thought this through. You know, in the States, you know, the just say no crap. You know, just say no. I understand that. I can just say no. And I can get detoxed. I can't stay detoxed. Because my head, the pages that we read on page 24, it says the main problem on page 23, it says the main problem centers in my mind rather than my body. We can get you detoxed. It's one of the things that we have to look at, guys, because a lot of you guys, what's happening is you're sabotaging your own sobriety. I'm not going to drink anymore, but I'm going to keep taking Lanesta. Well, but Lanesta's alcohol in a pill. It may not trigger you now, but it will trigger you eventually back to your drug of choice. And you could agree or not agree. I've got a hospital full of people that are there for Ambien and Lanesta. Prescription medication is what's killing us in our fellowships. This is not drugs. This is medication. Okay, fine. All that dentist work that you went back, yeah, never mind. I know exactly what we're doing here. That's why I get cranky with the ideas that we tell the newcomer, just don't drink and go to meetings. Because that won't treat this problem. I can get it past the physical, and I'm going to be comfortable in my skin because I get past it. But my mind is going to start needling on me. And that's what kills alcoholics when you compare the deal. My head says, a week out, 2 weeks out, you know, it starts to rationalize and justify why it's okay for me to put a little something back in my body. I'm one of those guys that hate marijuana. I know some of you guys love it. It was a drug that I just didn't like. Paranoid and horny don't go well together. I could drink a case of beer and go to work, and I'm fine. A cop rolled down. What's up, doc? I'm not fine. But I can't drive. I can't do anything. I smoke a joint. I get naked and get in the closet is what I do. Me? I don't know. I don't know. Who's that knocking on the door? You just ordered a pizza? But every time I stopped drinking, I'd get out a little ways. I know I can't drink because I know where it leads me. But I've never had a problem with pot because I don't like it that much. And my friend says, but you could probably smoke a joint. And so I smoke a joint. Don't like the way it makes me feel. 2 hours later, I'm peering out the window, run across the street, get a quart of beer, and I get home. I get downtown. Y'all understand? I go back to my drug of choice. That's cross addiction. We got the little college age kids at our hospital, and they all think they can still smoke pot and drink beer. I'm going to leave those oxys alone. Good for you, brother. Rock on. I'm glad to rock on. Good for you. But I'm still going to drink. But you're not going to stay sober then, because two things will happen. You'll either become a lush around the alcohol, or it'll lead you straight back to the oxys. Guys, if there was an exception to the rule, don't you think we would tell people that? I mean, can you imagine the hospital that we would have? Guys, come on. We'll get you off the oxy. We'll get you off the heroin. We'll get you off the cocaine. We're going to teach you how to smoke pot like a pro. We're not going to do more bead work at AT. What we're going to do is we're going to show you how to make bongs. And we can keep that place full. You know what I'm... Guys, you can't. You can't put another subject. Most of us in this room have done it. I'm going to leave this alone, and I'm going to pick this like trading seats on the Titanic. I'm done with that damn cocaine. Oh, yeah, you seem a little wired. Well, I'm doing a little amphetamine now. You know, it's like... But this is where your minds go. This is what your head tells you can do. And I'm telling you, we're watching thousands and thousands of people relapse around the alcohol, around a stupid prescription pad. If you put it in your body and it changes the way you feel, you're in trouble. And I don't give a rat's butt if the doctor's prescribing it or not. We're going to move into the second piece of this. Stay with that thought. Don't throw anything. God, people are territorial around their meds. I need those medications. You might. Most of us don't. I'm not telling you to stop taking anything. I'm saying most of us don't. 227 million prescriptions of antidepressants in the country, in the world today. The number one prescribed medication on the face of the earth is antidepressants. Now, what's wrong with this picture? We were talking about it coming over. There's two kinds of depression, folks. There's a little D depression. The guy that wrote Comfortably Numbs talks best about it. And then there's big D depression. I understand it's a clinical depression that needs medication. Rock on. Such a small percentage of us in the world have it, it's not even worth writing about. And the pharmaceutical companies couldn't survive selling them to the people that actually need it. But they're going to give it to the cat. Are you feeling a little down? Uh-huh. Having a little trouble sleeping, aren't you? How did you know, doctor? Here. Because I've seen 20 bozos just like you already this morning. Here, let me hear you. Here's your three prescriptions. Thank you, doctor. And 2 months later, you're picking up another desire chip. The mental obsession is what kills alcoholics and addicts. And the book says that nothing can defend us from that. From 23 to 43, probably the most powerful pages in the big book as far as I'm concerned. From 23 to 43, it talks about the mental obsession. That's the stories in there where it talks about Jim the car salesman and Fred the businessman and the jaywalker. You with us? Hi, jaywalkers. I know. it just freaks me out. Because our families, see, they all think that we should be able to think through this. What they're going to end up doing is they're going to wait till I get calls every day. Do you think she's hit bottom yet? Well, what do you mean? Well, she just had a DWI and Child Protective Services has been called and they're going to get her kid if she drinks again. I understand that, but what are you thinking that's going to be? There's no such thing as a bottom for us. Because you won't remember the consequences of a week or a month ago. Because normal people, 85% of the population out there can remember that. Oh my gosh, I cannot believe I've screwed up like this. We party too much. I'm hanging around the wrong people. I'm in jeopardy of losing my kids. I am so done. And they never do another drop. You with me? If we'd have been drinking together, you would have said they were an alcoholic. If we'd have been shooting dope, you'd have said they're a little dope fiend from hell. But they had the power to stop and stay stopped. Page 20 and 21 talks about it. Moderate drinkers, hard drinkers. But what about the real alcoholic? You with us? What about the real dope fiend? These are the cats that need, absolutely have to have, the spiritual connection. If they don't get it, they're not going to stay sober. Geez, I'm in AA for 7 years and nobody will tell me that. At what point does "I change my mind" qualify for insanity? Oh, I just changed my mind. Chris, you're on probation. You get caught again, you serve out a 10-year sentence. What do you mean you just changed your mind? That's the insanity. Why is it that people in Alcoholics Anonymous are afraid to call the disease what it is? It's a form of mental insanity. The treatment centers can help some... Guys, you just think about it. Up until 1935, when we got the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and we got the 12 steps, millions of us died in insane asylums. Most of us at our own hands because we couldn't stand the pain. You combine the mental obsession that tells me I don't have a problem with the phenomenon of craving, and you've got a setup for death. Underlying it all is a topic that nobody ever wants to talk about. Not in treatment, not in therapy, not in the probation officer, not in church, not anywhere. Damn sure not in our AA. It's called a spiritual malady. Bill Wilson wrote extensively about it. The spiritual malady is this internal condition. These little issue man pens, I brought a handful. I didn't figure we'd have 15 people here on this cold, frozen tundra. Look at this. If you want one, just find one that's got one and beat them up and get it, because I didn't bring enough. But I'll send you some if you want. But little issue man pins, and if you'll notice, the little issue guy is sitting there like this, got these little X's on the outside, and he's got this little dark spot on the inside. And this is the inside stuff. This is what we're supposed to be looking at, because this is what we're drinking over. Bill Wilson describes it as a spiritual malady. He does it on several pages. One of the main ones is on page 52, where it talks about the bedevilments. How many of y'all understand these symptoms when you're not drinking and drugging? All you little alcoholics and addicts in here, play. When I'm not drinking and drugging, do you find yourself irritable, restless, and discontent? Check, check, check. Depressed. Number one symptom of alcoholism and drug addiction is depression, folks. Boredom. Anxiety. Fear. Feeling of uselessness. No sense of direction. Trouble in personal relationships. Trouble making a living. Great line on page 52, it says, "We were unhappy." Shit, no shit. Oh my gosh. Listen, guys, but see, I'm spending 10 years in therapy listening to the therapist say, "Well, Chris, what's the problem?" I can stay sober for a period of time, guys, and then my head says, "It's time to take a drink." And I go back, you with me? But just one. And I drink it, and I get loaded again. I go back into the therapist's office, and the therapist looks at me with disgust. "Well, tell me about it." "Well, I was feeling a little cranky, feeling a little irritable, feeling a little, you know, a little." And went to the 7-Eleven, and she's, "You went to the 7-Eleven? I thought we talked about going to the 7-Eleven. "I know, but it's on the way to work." "I know, but there's got to be other ways to get to work." "I know, but it's 20 miles out of my way." "Well, how bad do you want to stay sober?" Listen to this crap, guys. People are being killed with this stuff all day long in the States. Trying to connect the drinking with something external. Listen, guys, I put the plug in the jug and I start to walk away from the alcohol and drugs, and the time starts to click. And my internal clock starts to grind, and all of a sudden, gradually, almost imperceptibly, the irritableness, the restlessness, the discontent, the low self-esteem starts to creep back. You'll follow? And I wake up one morning and I'm shaving and I'm just depressed and I don't like my wife anymore and I don't like my job and I don't like the town I'm living in. And a feeling of uselessness overcomes me. You'll follow? And then I get this little head, "You're probably clinically depressed." "Yeah, that's the ticket. That's what I..." And then I'm off to the stupid races. "You probably need a drink. One drink." And then we're off to the races. You follow? And I don't have the power to stop myself from doing it. And that's why Alcoholics and Addicts, we're trying to treat this internal condition. God, the therapist for years trying to connect the dots with me. "Chris, tell me about your external world. We talked about Vietnam. We talked about..." I'm going to tell you something, guys. We talked about my mom so much, I'm afraid to be in the same room with her. That and me being gay. I'm going to tell you something. We talked about... I'm so not gay. But we we talked about it nonstop. Well, Chris, there must be something that you're drinking over. You see, hard drinkers, moderate drinkers, they got something to drink over. The young guy at school, the pressure at school. Okay, well, let's set out a semester and see if that'll stabilize. So he sits out and he drinks himself into a coma. So maybe it wasn't the school. Maybe it was untreated alcoholism. I mean, why don't we start calling this what it is? This is not about the drinking and drugging. It's about what happens when I lay the stuff down. I don't get better. I get worse. How many of you guys have known that? My first wife came back with a bottle of vodka and says, here, drink this. I said, honey, I've got 2 months of sobriety. She said, you ain't sober, Jack. I liked you better drunk. If you insist. You're just trying to save the marriage, honey. An audible sigh of relief, you know. But I'm going to control it. I'm going to hold it together. But 2 days later, the craving kicks in, and I'm off to the stupid races one more time. You follow? I need to be returned to sanity, that second step stuff. And that's what this whole piece is about. This guy sat down in 1987 after I walked back in. They sat down and they opened the pages and they showed me. He said, Chris, for the first time, we need to qualify you, dog. We need to find out if you're an alcoholic or not. Is alcoholism your problem or is life your problem? These cats come to treatment and we spend 90% of the time in treatment fixing their external world. And I'm so glad that we do. I'm glad that we get a chance to do that. But if all we do is fix that external stuff, they're still going to drink. Y'all make sense? They're still going to get loaded. We got to do both. And that's why I love therapy. I love medicine. There's so many physical things that a doctor can help us with. But if all we do is throw another pill at this thing, I love it when the guys come to treatment. The first doctor's looking. Coming back off about a 6-month meth run. Buddy, you seem a little tense. Are you depressed? You've just ruined your life. You know, you have no money left. The girl's gone. Everything's gone. Well, here, I think we can help you out. And the prescription. There you go. But what's the problem? The problem is untreated alcoholism. In 1987, guys, that obsession to use lifted. And oh, by the way, a lot of that stuff that I was taking those medications for went away too. And gradually the depression lifted and the anxiety went away almost immediately. And that sense of impending doom, waiting for the next shoe to drop, ceased to be there. And about 6 months, 8 months out, under a doctor's care, I weaned myself off those medications. I never had to get on any more, which is pretty cool. Make sense? Anybody from this podium, anybody in this room, hear me say to stop taking your medication? Because I didn't say it. I'm not telling you to do that. I'm saying if you want to experiment with it, talk to your doctor and see what happens with it. You might find you don't need the expensive crap to get through the day. God's power is real. Yeah. So he sits down and he asks me the same questions about the drugs. When you put it in your body, can you control how much you use? No. Given sufficient reason, can you stop and stay stopped? No. You're a textbook drug addict. People are saying, what fellowship should I go to? Go to the fellowship you're comfortable in. But if you're not a drug addict, don't go to CA and try to help a cocaine addict get off cocaine. Because you're talking about something you don't know nothing about. We got too many people talking about stuff they don't know nothing about. Same goes the other way. If you've never had a problem with alcohol, stop trying to help somebody get off the alcohol. If you've never had a problem with it, you don't understand it. And inadvertently, what's going to happen is you're going to kill somebody. You're going to hurt somebody by giving them the wrong piece of information. You follow? Why I love the guys that start these other fellowships and Pill Addicts Anonymous and Cocaine Anonymous. And God, these fellowships where people can get together and they can identify and see what's happening. You're a pill addict and you're sitting in my meeting and you're coming unglued and you're sitting in a room full of alcoholics. We don't know what's going on. Hell, you've been sober 6 months. Why you look like you're coming unglued? He is. He's going through second, third stage detox. He's coming undone. But we don't know that because we're not pill addicts. And we've allowed him to stay in the same room with us. We should have sat down and qualified him and made sure he got in the right room. We could still be friends. Y'all understand it? This idea that if you're an Alcoholics Anonymous, you can help everybody. Of course, it's ridiculous. I had a lady the other day wanting to talk to me about kids. I said, are you nuts? Don't know nothing about no birthing babies. Don't want to either. Don't want to. They asked me, I'm going to show you something real quick here and let you guys go to lunch. In the AA book, before AA messed around and lost our copyright, or gave it away, in the front of our book, some of you guys, I saw a cat in here that had a third edition, had a little circle triangle. On the title page of the book, there's a circle and triangle. And it's not there now. In the fourth edition, don't bother to look because it's not there. But I've got a rubber stamp and I can stamp it right back where it used to be. It's just one of those things we do. One of the problems of it is that AA was going to save themselves a bunch of money trying to battle the litigations, the copyright infringements, using that circle triangle. The drunk junk guys were the stickers and stuff, and so they were going to anyway. They took it out, but the old timers used to use that circle triangle to make sure we were in all three parts of the program. And I can show you when I stamp your little book what it talks about. But recovery is always on the bottom, and then unity, and then service is on the side. It's a three part. Narcotics Anonymous has a circle and diamond that talks about the same basic stuff. You with me? It's three different parts of the program to treat three different parts of the disease: body, mind, spirit. And I can show you up here. But with a newcomer or with an old timer, this is what we use to help everybody stay on the same page. You with me? In an accountability group, instead of sitting down and listening to you ad nauseum tell me about your pathetically boring life one more time, all I'm interested in is knowing is, are you in all three parts of this program? Y'all follow me? That offended some of you. I know. I'm sorry. Your life is fascinating, and you're a beautiful child of God, and we're glad you're here. Do they have Barney in Canada? The little, you know. Okay. Recovery Unity Service. Okay, so what they did with me that night is they said, Chris, I said, I don't know why I can't stay sober. I've been around AA a long time, blah, blah, blah. I can't stay sober. And he said, Chris, it's easy to find out. I'm going to show you right now, and then you guys can turn around and show the guys that you sponsor how to do this too, because it's just real simple. If you're in all three parts of the program, you will not relapse. Now, I don't give a rat's butt what happens on the little X's on issue man on the outside. Everybody wants to focus on that. People in treatment come in there believing that if they can fix all the X's that they can stay sober. That's a damn lie. And we kill people by telling them that. Y'all understand that? I could stay sober if my wife stays. But you know, it may be God's will that wife goes away. Way far away. You know what I'm saying? But a lot of us, you know what, we're afraid of the change. We could talk 2 hours just about that. We're afraid to make the changes and the hard decisions in sobriety. The whole purpose of working the steps is to get spiritually connected, so God tells us what to do. God starts to tell us what to do, and you start questioning it. Well, I don't know. I've had that job for 16 years. I don't know. I don't think I should leave it. Well, why don't we talk about it? Have you been happy at that job? Well, I hate that son of a bitch. But you want to argue right? You're right to stay there? Do you think God wants you at a job that you can't stand? That's your crap, not God's. Y'all follow me? Buddy, I'm going to tell you what. My first sponsor said it. He said, when God closes a door, He's going to open a window. But it's hell in the hallway. You'll follow? And some of you guys, that's where you are. You've gotten sober and you're hiding in the hallway, and it's time to enter a room and you're afraid to do it. Man, let me help you, because you need to get on with this living thing. Some of you guys have put your life on hold waiting for somebody else to change. Guess what? If they were going to change, they would have already done it. Okay. Recovery Unity Service. Recovery is the basis. He asked me that night. He said, Chris, what's recovery? I don't know. I don't know. He said, obviously. Recovery is the 12 steps. Y'all agree? 12 steps. It's the only thing we have to sell. 12 steps. So let me ask you a question. Did you do the 12 steps? If the question at the time, being in AA for 7 years, I said, well, I'm working the step to the best of my ability. Which translates to no. He said, Chris, next time we ask you, these are all yes or no questions. So there's no trick questions here. Yes or no. Did you work all the steps? No. And he took a little X and did a little X on my deal like that, which I didn't appreciate. I'm very task oriented. I got a check, I'm okay. I got an X, I'm not okay. He said, what's this next piece? This unity. He says, what's this unity thing? I said, well, it's the fellowship, I guess. It's the meeting. He said, excellent. Are you going to meeting? Meeting maker, make it. And he put a check. I'll give you that one. He says, what's this service on the other side of the triangle here? What's AA service? We only have one primary purpose, and that's to carry the message of hope to the newcomer. You follow? We take our awakened spirit, and we help another person stay sober. That's a service that we carry. Oh, but you haven't worked the 12 steps, so you have no message to carry. And he put another X on it. Oh, I was not having a fun time at this. Y'all understand? I mean, I'm pissed. You remember me, the most important person here, and you're shaming me? I love that term, you're shaming me. Oh my God. He said, Chris, we're just trying to show you in a three-part program designed to treat a three-part disease, you're in exactly one part. And you wonder, take a three-legged stool, start cutting legs off and see how long. You can cut one leg off and balance on two legs maybe, but you cut two legs off, it's not going to be long. You're going to be falling on your skinny little butt. Yeah. You need to get in all three parts of the program. And we watch guys. I can have any patient that walks back into that hospital where I work, and I can ask them these questions right here, the relapsers, and we can go directly to why you relapse. Guy comes in, buddy, man, welcome back. We saw you about 8 months ago. You sure got banged up. Are you okay? Uh-huh. What happened? My wife left. You're a liar. I didn't ask what happened in your life. I said, what happened to cause you to drink? I told you, my wife left. Open your book. Remember that rubber stamp I put in there last time that you got and never bothered to look at again, obviously? Let's go back through the three parts and find out where you're at. Y'all with us? Every single time I can find a spot on that three-legged stool that they've cut parts off. You with us? They're either heavy in service and they haven't worked their own program, or they're not working any of the steps. You with me? And all they're doing is trying to live in meeting land. Either way, it won't work. How many circuit speakers? I travel around. Guys, I've been speaking from the podium since almost I got sober. 2 or 3 years in, I started speaking. And really active on this stuff the last 10 years. How many circuit speakers do you think I've watched relapse? People that we share podiums with. I could start naming your names right now that you know and love that have relapsed. Why? Why could they stand from the podium and do what we're doing here and fall on their butts? Why? Because they didn't do the same thing the little brand new knucklehead has to do. Y'all understand? There are no gurus in AA. We're all people suffering from a spiritual illness that needs to be treated. And if I stop doing those things, if I start thinking I'm too cool and I don't need to sponsor anybody, and that I don't need to work the steps myself, then what's going to happen? The obsession to use is going to return. You will follow? And my head's going to say, you can take a drink. I don't have a choice whether I'm going to drink, folks. I have a choice whether I'm going to stay in all three parts of the program. Y'all cool with that? Just about the first step in this thing about choice. Any of y'all got questions on that real quick? We'll bust up for lunch here in just a sec. Anybody got questions around this first step stuff? In everything I talk about, guys, about working the steps, I'm not a stickler for how you work the steps. I don't think Bill Wilson gave a rat's butt if you did a 3-column inventory or 4-column inventory, an extended 8-column inventory. I don't think it really cares. Whatever floats your boat, as far as I'm concerned, it works for me. Y'all with me? But I think that around this first step, you've got to understand. There's 100 pages that explains all 12 steps in the big book. 60 of those pages are about the first step. And yet we have people coming into treatment. Well, buddy, by the time you got here, you had your first step. You've already done that. Let's move on. They haven't done jack except add on a whole bunch of drama to their life. But they don't understand what it means to be alcoholic. Bill Wilson talks about it in Vision for You. He talks about Dr. Bob. He said Dr. Bob had much knowledge about himself as an alcoholic, but he didn't really understand what it meant to be an alcoholic. He knew he had a problem with alcohol, but that's light years away from knowing that he's got a fatal illness. Y'all with us? Physical allergy, mental obsession. That's where we have to go with this. Y'all cool? Anybody got a question? You're just frozen. This is the problem. You're just talking to people. Let's do that. Do you want to pass the basket to the seven? You want to do that? You're going to do it at the beginning? Yeah.